silence, and satsanga. Although Sri Mamana was happy to give his verbal teachings to anyone who asked for them, he frequently pointed out that his silent teachings were more direct and more powerful. These silent teachings consisted of a spiritual force which seemed to emanate from his form, a force so powerful that he considered it to be the most direct and important aspect of his teachings. Instead of giving out verbal instructions on how to control the mind, he effortlessly emitted a silent power, which automatically quietened the minds of everyone in his vicinity. The people who were attuned to this force report that they experienced it as a state of inner peace and well-being. In some advanced devotees, it even precipitated a direct experience of the self. This method of teaching has a long tradition in India, its most famous exponent being Dakshinamurti, a manifestation of Siva, who brought four learned sages to an experience of the self through the power of his silence. Sri Ramana frequently spoke of Dakshinamurti with great approval, and his name crops up in many of the conversations in this chapter. This flow of power from the guru can be received by anyone whose attention is focused on the self or on the form of the guru. Distance is no impediment to its efficacy. This attention is often called satsanga, which literally means association with being. Sri Ramana wholeheartedly encouraged this practice and frequently said that it was the most efficient way of bringing about a direct experience of the self. Traditionally, it involves being in the physical presence of one who has realized the self. But Sri Ramana gave it a much wider definition. He said that the most important element in satsanga was the mental connection with the guru. Satsanga takes place not only in his presence, but whenever and wherever one thinks of him. The following quotation gives an indication of the power of satsanga. It consists of five stray Sanskrit verses, which Sri Ramana came across at various times. He was so impressed by their contents that he translated them into Tamil and incorporated them in Uladu Narpardu Anubandham, one of his own written works which deals with the nature of reality. 1. By satsanga, the association with the objects of the world will be removed. When that worldly association is removed, the attachment or tendencies of the mind will be destroyed. Those who are devoid of mental attachment will perish in that which is motionless. Thus they attain jivan mukti, liberation. Cherish their association. 2. The supreme state which is praised and which is attained here in this life by clear vichara, which arises in the heart when association with the sadhu, a noble person, or one who has realized the self, is gained, is impossible to attain by listening to preachers, by studying and learning the meaning of the scriptures, by virtuous deeds, or by any other means. 3. If one gains association with sadhus, of what use are all the religious observances, niyamas? When the excellent, cool southern breeze itself is blowing, what is the use of holding a hand fan? 4. Heat will be removed by the cool moon, poverty by the celestial wish-fulfilling tree, and sin by the Ganges. But know that all these, beginning with the heat, will be removed merely by having the darshan, sight, of incomparable sadhus. 5. Sacred bathing, which are composed of water and images of deities, which are made of stone and earth, cannot be comparable to those great souls, mahatmas. Ah, what a wonder! The bathing places and deities bestow purity of mind after countless days, whereas such purity is instantly bestowed upon people as soon as sadhus see them with their eyes. Why does not Bhagavan go about and preach the truth to the people at large? How do you know I am not doing it? Does preaching consist in mounting a platform and haranguing the people around? Preaching is simple communication of knowledge. It can really be done in silence only. What do you think of a man who listens to a sermon for an hour and goes away without having been impressed by it so as to change his life? Compare him with another who sits in a holy presence and goes away after some time with his outlook on life totally changed. Which is the better, to preach loudly without effect or to sit silently sending out inner force? Again, how does speech arise? First, there is abstract knowledge. Out of this arises the ego, which in turn gives rise to thought, and thought to spoken word. So the word is the great grandson of the original source. If the word can produce an effect, judge for yourself how much more powerful must be the preaching through silence. How can silence be so powerful? A realized one sends out waves of spiritual influence which draw many people towards him. Yet he may sit in a cave and maintain complete silence. We may listen to lectures upon truth and come away with hardly any grasp of the subject. But to come in contact with a realized one, though he speaks nothing, will give much more grasp of the subject. He never needs to go out among the public. If necessary, he can use others as instruments. The guru is the bestower of silence, who reveals the light of self-knowledge which shines as the residual reality. Spoken words are of no use whatsoever if the eyes of the guru meet the eyes of the disciple. Does Bhagavan give diksha, initiation? Mauna, silence, is the best and the most potent diksha. That was practiced by Sri Dakshinamurti. Initiation by touch, look, etc. are all of a lower order. Silent initiation changes the hearts of all. Dakshinamurti observed silence when the disciples approached him. That is the highest form of initiation. It includes the other forms. There must be subject-object relationship established in the other dikshas. First the subject must emanate, and then the object. Unless these two are there, how is the one to look at the other or touch him? Mauna Diksha is the most perfect. It comprises looking, touching, and teaching. It will purify the individual in every way and establish him in the reality. Swami Vivekananda says that a spiritual guru can transform spirituality substantially to the disciple. Is there a substance to be transferred? Transfer means eradication of the sense of being the disciple. The master does it. Not that the man was something at one time and metamorphosed later into another. Is not the grace the gift of the guru? God, grace, and guru are all synonymous and also eternal and immanent. Is not the self already within? Is it for the guru to bestow it by his look? If a guru thinks so, he does not deserve the name. The books say that there are so many kinds of diksha, initiation by hand, by touch, by eye, etc. They also say that the guru makes some rites with fire, water, japa, or mantras, and calls such fantastic performances dikshas. As if the disciple becomes ripe only after such processes are gone through by the guru. If the individual is sought, he is nowhere to be found. Such is the guru. Such is Dakshinamurti. What did he do? He was silent when the disciples appeared before him. He maintained silence and the doubts of the disciples were dispelled, which means that they lost their individual identities. That is jnana, and not all the verbiage usually associated with it. Silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the sastras may be, they fail in their effect. The guru is quiet, and peace prevails in all. His silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the sastras put together. These questions arise because of the feeling that, having been here so long, heard so much, exerted so hard, one has not gained anything. The work proceeding within is not apparent. In fact, the guru is always within you. Can the guru's silence really bring about advanced states of spiritual awareness? There is an old story which demonstrates the power of the guru's silence. Tattvaraya composed a bharani, a kind of poetic composition in Tamil, in honor of his guru Swarupananda, and convened an assembly of learned pandits to hear the work and assess its value. The pandits raised the objection that a bharani was only composed in honor of great heroes capable of killing 1,000 elephants in battle, and that it was not in order to compose such a work in honor of an ascetic. Thereupon the author said, "Let us all go to my guru and we shall have this matter settled there." They went to the guru, and after they had all taken their seats, the author told his guru the purpose of their visit. The guru sat silent, and all the others also remained in Mauna. The whole day passed, the night came, and some days and nights, and yet all sat there silently, no thought at all occurring to any of them, and nobody thinking or asking why they had come there. After 3 or 4 days like this, the guru moved his mind a bit, and the people assembled immediately regained their thought activity. They then declared, "Conquering 1,000 elephants is nothing beside this guru's power to conquer the rutting elephants of all our egos put together. So certainly he deserves the bharani in his honor." How does this silent power work? Language is only a medium for communicating one's thoughts to another. It is called in only after thoughts arise. Other thoughts arise after the I thought rises, and so the I thought is the root of all conversation. When one remains without thinking, one understands another by means of the universal language of silence. Silence is ever speaking. It is a perennial flow of language which is interrupted by speaking. These words, "I am speaking," obstruct that mute language. For example, there is electricity flowing in a wire. With resistance to its passage, it glows as a lamp or revolves as a fan. In the wire, it remains as electric energy. Similarly also, silence is the eternal flow of language obstructed by words. What one fails to know by conversation extending to several years can be known instantly in silence or in front of silence. Dakshinamurti and his 4 disciples are a good example of this. This is the highest and most effective language. Bhagavan says the influence of the yani steals into the devotee in silence. Bhagavan also says contact with great men, mahatmas, is one efficacious method of realizing one's true being. Yes, what is the contradiction? Yani, great men, mahatmas, do you differentiate between them? No. Contact with them is good. They will work through silence. By speaking, their power is reduced. Silence is most powerful. Speech is always less powerful than silence. So mental contact is the best. Does this hold good even after the dissolution of the physical body of the yani? Or is it true only so long as he is in the flesh and blood? Guru is not the physical form. So the contact will remain even after the physical form of the guru vanishes. One can go to another guru after one's guru passes away, but all gurus are one, and none of them is the form you see. Always mental contact is the best. Is the operation of grace the mind of the guru acting on the mind of the disciple, or is it a different process? The highest form of grace is silence. It is also the highest upadesa, teaching. Vivekananda has also said that silence is the loudest form of prayer. It is so for the seeker's silence. The guru's silence is the loudest upadesa. It is also grace in its highest form. All other dikshas, initiations, are derived from mona and are therefore secondary. Mona is the primary form. If the guru is silent, the seeker's mind gets purified by itself. Sri Bhagavan's silence is itself a powerful force. It brings about a certain peace of mind in us. Silence is never-ending speech. Vocal speech obstructs the other speech of silence. In silence, one is in intimate contact with the surroundings. the silence of Dakshinamurti removed the doubts of the four sages. Mona Vyakta Prakatita Tattvam means the truth expounded by silence. Silence is said to be exposition. Silence is so very potent. For vocal speech, organs of speech are necessary and they precede speech. But the other speech lies even beyond thought. It is, in short, transcendent speech or unspoken words, paravak. Can everyone benefit from this silence? Silence is the true upadesa. It is the perfect upadesa. It is suited only for the most advanced seeker. The others are unable to draw full inspiration from it. Therefore, they require words to explain the truth. But truth is beyond words. It does not admit of explanation. All that is possible to do is to indicate it. It is said that one look of a Mahatma is enough that idols, pilgrimages, etc. are not so effective. I have been here for 3 months, but I do not know how I have been benefited by the look of Maharshi. The look has a purifying effect. Purification cannot be visualized. Just as a piece of coal takes a long time to be ignited, a piece of charcoal takes a shorter time, and a mass of gunpowder is instantaneously ignited. So it is with the grades of men coming into contact with Mahatmas. The fire of wisdom consumes all actions. Wisdom is acquired by association with the wise, satsanga, or rather its mental atmosphere. Can the guru's silence bring about realization if the disciple makes no effort? In the proximity of a great master, the vasanas cease to be active. The mind becomes still, and samadhi results. Thus, the disciple gains true knowledge and right experience in the presence of the master. To remain unshaken in it, further efforts are necessary. Eventually, the disciple will know it to be his real being, and will thus be liberated even while alive. If the search has to be made within, is it necessary to be in the physical proximity of the master? It is necessary to be so until all doubts are at an end. I am not able to concentrate by myself. I am in search of a force to help me. Yes, that is called grace. Individually, we are incapable because the mind is weak. Grace is necessary. Sadhu seva, serving a sadhu, will bring it about. There is, however, nothing new to get. Just as a weak man comes under the control of a stronger one, the weak mind of a man comes under control easily in the presence of strong-minded sadhus. That which is only grace, there is nothing else. Is it necessary to serve the guru physically? The sastras say that one must serve a guru for 12 years in order to attain self-realization. What does the guru do? Does he hand it over to the disciple? Is not the self always realized? What does the common belief mean then? Man is always the self, and yet he does not know it. Instead, he confounds it with the non-self, the body, etc. Such confusion is due to ignorance. If ignorance is wiped out, the confusion will cease to exist, and true knowledge will be unfolded. By remaining in contact with realized sages, the man gradually loses the ignorance until its removal is complete. The eternal self is thus revealed. You say that the association with the wise, satsanga, and service of them is required of the disciple? Yes, the first really means association with the unmanifest sat or absolute existence. But as very few can do that, they have to take second best, which is association with the manifest sat, that is the guru. Association with sages should be made because thoughts are so persistent. The sage has already overcome the mind and remains in peace. Being in his proximity helps to bring about this condition in others. Otherwise, there is no meaning in seeking his company. The guru provides the needed strength for this, unseen by others. Service is primarily to abide in the self, but it also includes making the guru's body comfortable and looking after his place of abode. Contact with the guru is also necessary, but this means spiritual contact. If the disciple finds the guru internally, then it does not matter where he goes. Staying here or elsewhere must be understood to be the same and to have the same effect. My profession requires me to stay near my place of work. I cannot remain in the vicinity of sadhus. Can I have realization even in the absence of satsanga? Sat is aham pratyaya saram, the self of selves. The sadhu is that self of selves. He is immanent in all. Can anyone remain without the self? No. So no one is away from satsanga. Is proximity to the guru helpful? Do you mean physical proximity? What is the good of it? The mind alone matters. The mind must be contacted. Satsanga will make the mind sink into the heart. Such association is both mental and physical. The extremely visible being of the guru pushes the mind inward. He is also in the heart of the seeker, and so he draws the latter's inward bent mind into the heart. All that I want to know is whether satsanga is necessary and whether my coming here will help me or not. First, you must decide, what is satsanga? It means association with sat, or reality. One who knows or who has realized sat is also regarded as sat. Such association with sat or with one who knows sat is absolutely necessary for all. Sankara has said that in all the three worlds there is no boat like satsanga to carry one safely across the ocean of births and deaths. Satsanga means sangha, association, with sat. Sat is only the self. Since the self is not now understood to be sat, the company of the sage who has thus understood it is sought. That is satsanga. Introversion results. Then sat is revealed.